This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPMLP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I am Amanda Johnson.
And I'm Campbell Simmons. In the next half hour, we'll hear stories from our community news reporters about activists fighting the development of AI data centers in Lancaster, how e-bikes fit into the region's cycling landscape, an organization that helps seniors stay active by dancing, and a new website designed to help bring people together in person.
But first, the West Philly Tool Library has been lending everything from measuring tapes to power tools to community members for over 15 years. But when the organization learned that the lease for its 47th Street location wouldn't be renewed, the staff and volunteers who run the tool library started rallying to ensure its future. Block by Block reporter Samantha Roll brings us this story.
My name's Don. I'm a volunteer with the West Philly Tool Library. We're calling our members to ask for your help to save the tool library. In September, we got notice that we'll no longer be able to renew the lease at our current location, and we have to be out by November 30th. We're asking for help with the upfront costs of moving and the renovations that the new space will need.
Don Webster is one of many volunteers who have been calling members to fundraise for the tool library. By last weekend, they'd already raised over $20,000. But they need around $50,000 to cover moving costs and potential repairs to the new space. The West Philly Tool Library is home to over 5,000 tools, about 95% of which were donated by members of the public. These include bike repair toolkits, belt sanders, pressure washers, glass cutters, and more. Anyone is welcome to join the tool library and borrow tools. Executive Director Jason Sanders says the organization also hosts regular events and classes on everything from carpentry and home plumbing to sewing machine basics. These classes are taught by knowledgeable members of the community.
Sharing tools, sharing skills is one thing, but having that personal connection of, you know, knowing that your neighbor is teaching, you know, the sewing class and some of your other neighbors are going to the framing class, you know, it's a very kind of hyper-local organization that brings a lot of folks together.
They also lend tools to community projects such as park cleanups, community gardens, and playground builds. Over the years, thousands of people have become members of the tool library. Natalie Wrights says she initially joined because she wanted to reupholster some vintage chairs without breaking the bank. But she's found much more than just tools at the tool library.
It's been really awesome. There's a lot of really cool artists who do classes here. I feel like there's a lot of spaces where women are not encouraged to like use tools or like try to repair things. And something I like about the tool library is it welcomes everybody. They just want to show you how to fix your things. And the community here has shown up for me in some unexpected ways too. Someone who works here gave me an air conditioning unit this summer. And I was really struggling without AC and it just changed my life. And it just, yeah, I wasn't expecting the tool library to change my life as much as it has.
The tool library's staff pride themselves on expanding community access to tools as well as the skills to use them. This is especially important as Philadelphia's infrastructure continues to age. But learning their lease wouldn't be renewed through a wrench in the tool library's daily operations. Starting in November, their class program is going to be on hold. According to Executive Director Jason Sanders, their $50,000 fundraising goal will help them reopen the tool library's doors as quickly as possible.
You know, of course, we're going to use a lot of volunteers, but moving thousands and thousands of tools and all the storage racks and everything is, you know, not an easy task. And, you know, throughout the month of November, when we're going to be moving and we're going to be closed, we intend to continue to pay our librarian staff.
However, money is far from the only way to help. Donations of time or construction materials will also be pivotal during the move. In a way, the moving process is much like the tool library itself, a little scrappy and full of heart. Despite everything, tool librarian Judy Ha thinks that the lending library model has something important to teach us.
I think it's a system that kind of forces people to have more of a collectivist mindset and a more collective, like, community mindset. And I know it's hard to survive under our political economic landscape right now, but I hope it really does.
Tool Library volunteer Natalie Wrights says that the organization is hosting a Save the Tool Library fundraiser on Saturday, October 25th from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. There will be pumpkin carving, games, food, and more.
It's a fun, family-friendly event. There's going to be food. There's going to be a raffle. There's going to be all kinds of fun stuff. It's going to be a good opportunity to send off the tool library and connect with other volunteers, other members, and to celebrate what the space is and hopefully what it will become.
The West Philly Tool Library hopes to reopen in December and resume classes in January. To learn more, go to westphillytools.org/save the tool library.
It takes a lot of computer power for ChatGPT and other artificial intelligence applications to work. That's why construction of AI data centers has become a booming business over the past few years. But many people are concerned about the impact those data centers can have on local communities. Block by Block's Khalisa Hamid brings us this story about how activists are pushing back against plans to build data centers in Lancaster City and how the November 4th election is an opportunity for residents to voice their concerns.
Residents of Lancaster City have been in a months-long battle with their city council over the proposed construction of 4 AI data centers within the city's 7 square miles. Blindsided by the moves, local activists and community members have been openly raising concerns over the environmental and financial impacts should these plans go through. Two such voices who have been active in the fight against the proposed data centers in their neck of the woods, Coral Wrights and Jontel Toland, also known as Circumstantial Saint.
Lancaster City is like 2 by 4 square miles, packed with 70,000 people in those borders alone, let alone the county itself has a little over 500,000 people. And the data centers would be smack dab in the middle of all those people. When it comes to electricity, there have been some figures that I've seen that it could possibly use 4 times the amount of what Lancaster City itself consumes. There are places across the nation that have faced blackouts because their infrastructure itself cannot support what damper the AI data centers puts on its infrastructure. And so that's one thing that we should be concerned about. But the other is air. That is one of the biggest issues because Lancaster County has one of the highest levels of particulate pollution, meaning soot pollution, in the country. And a lot of that comes from the fact that Lancaster County has about only 13% of tree coverage. And being the breadbasket of Pennsylvania, it's mostly open space and rolling hills. Livestock itself is a huge pollutant to the environment itself. When there is no trees to soak up all that carbon, a lot of it sits in the air. And the way that the geography of Lancaster sits, the way that the wind can blow, a lot of the pollution gets held closer to the ground. If we were to have a data center that ran off of air, it would further pollute the air that is already some of the worst in the country.
And as Mayor Sirachi is fond of saying, she doesn't control electricity prices. So how do we protect ourselves from not only possible blackouts, how do we protect ourselves from already not being able to afford our electricity? And then who's paying for the extra electricity?
Who's paying for the people having strokes and migraines and the hospital ER rooms piling up with people with all kinds of chronic issues that they can't seem to figure out what is wrong with them when the common denominator will be the noise pollution from these AI data centers? And I think that personally is my biggest concern because it's a silent killer.
Who is going to pay for the families that lose their livelihood because nobody wants to visit Lancaster County anymore?
Even amidst rising concerns, Coral offers a few ways for us to stay engaged with our local efforts.
One, time is crucial. The sooner you start to look into your municipality's zoning ordinances, the sooner you look into who controls what the process is, the process is so important, and people overlook that because if you don't know how to follow the process, nobody will listen to you. The law isn't about what we like. If you don't like what the law is allowing, then you have to go through the process to change the law. Go to your city council meetings or whatever your equivalent is. Even if they're boring, do it. If you can, do it. And if you can't, watch the replays. And if there are no replays, advocate for replays. In a lot of ways, our local elections, our state elections, do a lot more for us than our national elections. It gives us way more access and control to holding people accountable. Obviously, it impacts our well-being and the well-being of every other citizen of the United States. And so the more we can talk about it, the more we can ask questions, the more other people are going to become aware and start doing the work that they can in their own communities, which inherently will make everyone's community safer.
Philadelphians have recently joined the public contending on the rise of AI use in government operations. A public hearing was held here at PhillyCam on October 15th, where residents engaged public officials regarding concerns of surveillance, data misuse, and a lack of accountability for big tech companies. We now join a growing national dialogue around how citizens can stay privy to and protect their communities from exploitative data practices between governments and AI giants.
In 2023, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murphy declared loneliness a public health epidemic that has serious health consequences. Two Philadelphians have a solution. Join a club. Their website called Join Philly makes it easy for people to find clubs focused on a wide range of subjects. Block by Block reporter Helen Horseman Allen spoke with one of Join Philly's co-founders to find out more.
Brian Adolph already had experience bringing people together thanks to a singing group he started a few years ago. But when he saw the Netflix documentary Join or Die about the importance of joining clubs, he knew he could do more.
I started this thing called Fishtown Choir, which is a pub or a bar choir. We give them lyric sheets, teach them three-part harmonies, and then we all just sing together. What really struck me when we started this a couple of years ago is the number of people that came by themselves and that were new to Philadelphia and made friends there, and a real community grew out of that. And then I saw this documentary with a friend of mine, Kristen Tideman. We said, what should we do? And that's kind of how Join Philly was born. Join Philly is an online directory. So the goal of it is to make it easier, more accessible for people to find, join, and even start clubs.
And there are a lot of clubs, with new ones being added every week. As groups find them, even Brian is surprised with the selection.
I'm super delighted when it's like, oh, the Cactus Society joined. I was like, I didn't even know we had a Cactus Society, like Philly Queer Birders, the many, 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 many running clubs in this city. It's pretty awesome. And that's kind of where we started with and said, okay, how can we help people essentially find their people?
But it's also really important, and not just for Cactus fans. Joining a club gives people a chance to meet people who they'll see again and again. Those repeated interactions are the recipe for community. It's something so critical. Former U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy made it the focus of his 2025 outgoing statement, A Parting Prescription for America.
Loneliness is become a public health crisis. It's as bad as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. With Join Philly, we realized that belonging is a civic infrastructure. It's not a luxury. It's as essential as roads and parks. So with Join Philly, can we help build an infrastructure of belonging? And how do we do that? Starting with clubs.
Dr. Murthy isn't the only expert focused on community. The film that sparked Brian's interest, Join or Die, is a documentary available now on Netflix. It's based on the work of Robert Putnam and his book, Bowling Alone. It highlights all kinds of civic infrastructure. So besides the website, Brian and Kristen started two other Join Philly projects. They're building a paper directory and an old school activities fair like you might have gone to at your high school.
It's this pamphlet that I guess we get mailed to you, and it had information about your town, but also had your list of clubs. So like the Rotary Club and the Kiwanis Club. We're doing a 48-page print magazine called Joiner's Almanac, which will be listings of all the clubs along with what I'm calling civic storytelling. So that is currently in the works. we did our pilot pop-up activities fair in August. Huge success. It was 98 degrees, sweltering. We had over 350 people come. Unlike a typical vendor fair, there's nothing to buy. So it was just tables of all the clubs, and it was just amazing vibes. Everyone was super excited.
Besides all the clubs, they're hoping to meet new members. There was one other popular stop at the fair. It was a wall of clubs that could exist if people wanted them.
So I just got a big piece of craft paper and hung it on a wall. The thing was the Philly club wish list, and it was, what clubs do you want to see in Philadelphia? And we had Sharpies there, and people wrote their clubs. I took a bunch of pictures of it, and I put it on social media, on Instagram, and I got a lot of engagement. But I was so excited when people would comment on that big list of clubs and would tag a club that's we already have and say, we already have that club, tag them, and then that club joined the directory.
Join Philly is part of a broader community of people working on this problem across the country.
This is not a Philly-only thing. There's definitely, I'm not saying a movement, but there's definitely a lot of interest and enthusiasm and excitement. And I'm on all these Zooms now about how do we sustainable funding and all this stuff.
Brian and Kristen are leading the way with their directory and the real-world activities fairs, but they love hearing what's happening in other cities, too.
I was on a panel a couple weeks ago talking about activities fairs. Also on that panel was someone from the City of Boston's Office of Civic Organizing. They were talking about block parties. They used to charge permits, but now they give grants. They give microgrants because the mayor of Boston realized, understood how important block parties were for the civic and social and public health of their residents.
Brian doesn't know if he'll be running Join Philly forever, but he hopes it can become a platform that can outlast his involvement.
The whole goal is, can we build this, build the infrastructure for it so that it can be taken over by someone else or another group? Can this be sustainable? Can there be funding for this? It doesn't take a ton of resources to run this.
But in the meantime, Brian will keep running Join Philly and hopes you find your people there. And if you don't?
I'm an expert at telling people they should start a club. That's the number one thing I do now. It's like, oh, that's not, you have that weird little cool idea? You just start a club.
E-bikes, which are bicycles with motors to help you go faster, have been around for a long time. But they've really taken off in recent years, and many communities are struggling to figure out how to keep riders, pedestrians, and other people on the road safe. My co-host, Amanda Johnson, recently spoke with an expert on cycling in the city to find out more.
The Bicycle Coalition of Philadelphia is a group that advocates for laws to make cycling safer for riders in the city. And that includes bikes that move entirely with foot-to-pedal power, or bikes which have motors as well as pedals. Bicycle Coalition Research Director John Boyle said, there are a lot of good reasons for people to ride bikes.
It's eco-friendly. It's also geometry, so you can have a lot more people walking and cycling than you have people in large cars. And in a congested city like Philadelphia, that allows more freedom of movement, exercise. Cycling for a half hour each way takes you 4 miles about, typically. Medical experts have advised at least have a half hour of physical activity, and you can really just do that with your bicycle commute, even with an e-bike.
E-bikes have been around for some time. They appear to have become very popular recently.
They were actually invented in the 1890s, but it really wasn't until lithium batteries made them light and affordable. So I guess between 2010 and 2020, we've seen new and improved bicycles that came down in price and weight. And, you know, it's hard to go anywhere, not only in the city, but in the suburbs, and not see e-bikes and e-scooters somewhere during your day.
It is easy to see why people like e-bikes. They cost a lot less than a car or a motorcycle. But there are different classes of e-bikes, and some of them are able to go as fast as a motorcycle.
People for Bikes, which is the National Bike Industry Advocacy Group, they came up with a three-class system for e-bikes. So we have Class 1 and Class 2, and these are the most common types of e-bikes. They are programmed not to go faster than 20 miles per hour. And I have an e-bike, the top speed is 14 miles per hour. These e-bikes are pretty much in sync with a typical acoustic type of bicycle, because the speeds are, depending on your fitness level, from 8 to 20 miles per hour. So an e-bike kind of fits in with that, and also typical low-speed e-scooters. So then there's Class 3 e-bikes, and they have become very popular, and they sell really well online. And those bikes, if you pedal, deliver power up to 28 miles per hour, which some people find thrilling and some people would find scary. And if you're on a trail and you're walking your dog and somebody passes you at 25 miles per hour, that is going to freak you out. And what we're seeing is that there's a small percent of the population, particularly like the younger population, so people in their teens and early 20s, who sort of like have the need for speed. And the market has responded to that by building and selling what we call e-motos. So these are out-of-class e-bikes that can go anywhere from 28 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour. There are e-scooters out there going 60 miles per hour. You know, if you stand out on Broad Street long enough, you're going to find someone going 30 to 40 miles per hour on an e-scooter. You just have to be out there for 15 minutes and you'll definitely see someone. I think what some people don't know is that e-scooters in Pennsylvania at this point are illegal. So there is this huge market that is buying these illegal vehicles, and there has been no unified response. And without state and federal regulations, the towns feel like that they are on their own. And for them, the simplest thing to do is just ban them. And that's detrimental, because if you cross over a municipal line, you might be subject to different regulations. The first thing Pennsylvania has to do is adopt sensible e-scooter laws. And there was actually a bill that we support at this point. It's not finalized. That would create reasonable rules for e-scooters and age limits and helmet requirements and other things that make sense.
So, if you are on a bicycle or an e-bike, enjoy the ride and be safe. Staying physically active later in life can help seniors maintain their physical and mental health. And that doesn't necessarily mean going to the gym or taking long walks. Block by Block reporter Ivan Felder III's aunt and uncle teach dance classes to seniors. And Ivan says their story proves that exercise doesn't have to be boring.
Five, six, give me that three. My name is David Early.
I am Selena Early.
I'm the CEO.
I am the president and COO
of In the Dance LLC.
For more than 20 years, In the Dance LLC has worked with communities throughout the Philadelphia region, guiding thousands of participants through rhythm, movement, and motion. I spoke with the creators, David and Selena Early, about their shared dance history, the realities of their outreach, and how their work ensures that our communities will continue to stay active in the dance.
In the Dance was created about 2002 as a part of the Philadelphia Corporation on Aging's need for more movement therapy with older adults.
The initial goals of In the Dance was to provide a space for older adults to come in and to get exercise, body range and movement and motion in the evening so they can have some form of social interaction.
We teach line dance,
partner dancing, bop cha-cha.
We do a lot of chair exercise and chair Zumba.
In the years since its initial inception, In the Dance has opened its offerings to include all generations of community participants.
Our goals always are to provide for our community simple dance classes, all skill sets, all ages. Our oldest participant is 92.
Step back and cha-cha, step up.
And we teach cha-cha. Everyone from children to adults to older adults, everybody.
Tap, tap, swing, full turn. That's cha-cha, left, right.
Dance and movement is important because so many people do not get enough exercise. Exercise is extremely important for your heart health. Doctors are asking people, are you walking? Are you doing some form of exercise? And dancing is a lot of fun, so it doesn't feel like exercise.
It not only deals with your physical self, it also deals with socialization. It also deals with a lot of cognitive skills. We try to target those people who have had strokes, any type of COPD, different types of breathing issues, anyone who has had any type of chronic heart issues also. Those people that have dementia, those people that have some forms of Alzheimer's, all find benefits in dance. The repetition of it creates remembering, so it all helps in that respect.
I met up with David and Selena at a Monday movement session with some of the neighborhood's residents. On this night, the class focuses on chair dancing, a modified approach to traditional line dances.
So we have a class that start off as older adults standing. When COVID hit, a lot of the older adults could no longer stand because of the inability to move their muscles. And after COVID, we realized that the mobility decreased. So what we did was we started doing every dance we can do standing up, we teach the older adults now in a chair.
Our whole goal is to simply have fun. We don't want people marching to the exact same tune. This is dance. It's not military marching. Whatever movements you can do is what we try to accommodate.
Miss Donna, a 10-year student of David and Selena, attended tonight's class.
I like all kinds of dance. When I came here, I started line dancing, and I like that. Because I had an operation on my spine, and I have to keep my legs moving because they get tight.
Ms. Gloria Moore, a student for the past 9 years.
It's exercise for me. I need it, you know, for my mobility and everything. I love the chair dancing. It's the moving around that gets to me, but I love the chair dancing.
Ms. Barbara Clemens, a 4-year participant of In the Dance.
It gives my lungs better capacity. My stamina is much better. It helps my limbs, my outer limbs and arm strength, but also helps my inner strength.
I asked David and Selena, now more than 2 decades in, to reflect on their organization's accomplishments and how they are moving into the future.
We've grown so much, we've actually now are adding on to what we already have that just start off as just line dancing. So it goes deeper. It goes as deep as creating a family environment. I would love to continue to reach out to anybody who wants to come to dance, to move in a chair, to come and sit down sometimes, just conversations. That's also a form of exercise because it's a mental exercise.
So because we have a lot of those things in practice already, our future looks good because we don't have to go backwards to go forwards.
You can find more information about In the Dance LLC, all one word, on Facebook and Instagram, and at inthedancellc.wordpress.com.
Block by Block is produced by Angie Bacha, Ivan Felder III, Kalisa Hamid, Helen Horseman Allen, and Vanessa Lowe, Samantha Roll, Winter Schneider, Kennedy Scurry, and us.
Amanda Johnson.
And Campbell Simmons. Winter Schneider is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is the radio news managing editor for WPPM. PETA Liu is the radio operations manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's radio program manager.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can find past episodes of the show on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening!